Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Xabi Alonso's a no-go, so where do Liverpool turn next? We'll talk about why he's staying in Leverkusen. We'll assess the contenders to replace Klopp at Anfield. And we'll talk about the games coming up. And we'll do all of that with James Pearce and Simon Hughes. But as ever, let's start with those three words. I've got three for you, Simon. Back still sore.
It is very short, Tony. Thanks for your concern, yes. My three words are time for revenge.
I like it. I like it. We owe those Sheffield United swines.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
It's personal with Chris Wilder.
Yeah. It's James.
I'm going to go for let's stay calm because it was... It all got a bit frantic and very nervy at Anfield last Sunday, and I just think, come on, we've still got nine games of this.
Yeah, I was hiding behind the couch. It was terrible. And I was at the match. That makes it worse. How did they get me couching? That's a big question. But anyway, we'll see what they're saying over on the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. Phil Kane, stop conceding first. That's a fair point.
It's a good advice.
Yeah, Paul William, in our hands. Well, that's true as well. Anthony Smith, bench getting stronger. And Dennis Gartman Jr. got a win out. I'd like to hear what Senior says.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Last week, I had a very good meeting with Simon, with Fernando, with Sir Marin, when I informed them that my decision to continue being coach of Bayer Leverkusen.
Well, Xabi Alonso was staying in Germany, isn't he? And James, you know what? I knew this was going to happen. You know, it was obvious. You know, it's like there is no... I didn't see there was a reasonable career path for him. If he wants to end up in Real Madrid, that went through Anfield at this time. And it was this year's Jude Bellingham as well, wasn't it?
I must admit, I didn't. I'd be lying if I said I absolutely saw it coming, despite people at Liverpool urging caution and saying, you know, this isn't some nailed on done deal. There's no coronation already booked in. And even, you know, figures at Leverkusen and people close to Alonso saying much the same. Part of me thought, this is a smokescreen. How can Xabi Alonso possibly turn down an opportunity as big as this? And also, I think when you looked at it from Liverpool's perspective, he was the strongest candidate in terms of ticking the boxes in terms of his body of work at Leverkusen, coupled with the fact that I think because of his bond and emotional ties with Liverpool, he would have been afforded the kind of time and patience probably that others wouldn't get. So as much as it kind of tallied with a lot of the information that had been coming out, I was still surprised. And yeah, the more I thought about it, the more I thought to myself, is it brave or is it foolish on Alonso's part? Because things can change so fast in football. You know, are those job opportunities really going to come his way again? Yet the more I thought about it, the more I thought it's actually brave, I think, because to have that kind of plan for yourself and you're not going to be influenced by outside factors, you're going to do things at your own pace, I think fair play to him that he's decided that he's not quite ready for that step and Liverpool will have to look elsewhere.
So you did a really good piece on this, didn't you? On what
did
takes
I? Well, thanks.
Well, yeah, you did, actually. I liked it. I thought it was really good. And what it takes to be a Liverpool manager with a lot of detail. But before, I want you to talk about that. But, like, we're going to end up with Eddie Howe, aren't we?
Don't say that, Tony.
We are. Someone said to me very early on in this, you know, you're going to end, when you know, Michael Edwards was coming back, you're going to end up with Eddie Howe. Mm. And I was like, ha, 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 ha. No, I'm serious. But anyway, let's talk about your piece.
Mm. So what it takes to be a Liverpool manager, we're talking about this piece, yeah. Not the profile of Alonso. Right, so...
Well, a bit of that as well.
Yeah, okay. So I think what Liverpool really need to be looking for, and the characteristics that have worked when Liverpool have made successful appointments in the past, tend to be appointing somebody who has achieved essentially what you're trying to achieve already. Klopp certainly falls into that category. You know, when Liverpool were replacing Brendan Rodgers, you know, Jürgen Klopp became the outstanding candidate because he'd done with Dortmund what essentially Liverpool were trying to do in the Premier League, you know, get ahead of clubs with greater financial means, essentially. Now, it's becoming harder to do that, of course, because there are fewer examples in world football now of clubs overachieving, if you like. Now, people say, well, Liverpool winning the league shouldn't be seen as an overachievement. It should be what the target is in any given season anyway. But I'm just talking about financially here, what the team is up against. And it's becoming harder for managers across Europe to do that. So I would say the field of candidates is narrower than maybe it was, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, because, you know, a lot of these super clubs are becoming so dominant in European football. So that's got to be the first thing, really. And that's why Xabi Alonso, I think, above everything else, sort of was such an attractive prospect, because he's taken a team that was, I would say, was underachieving when he took over. I mean, it shouldn't have been in the relegation zone, but it certainly shouldn't. If somebody had just said that 18 months later it's going to be 13 points clear at the top of Bundesliga, you know, the odds of that would have been pretty long, I would say. So that's why he was such an attractive proposition, because he's overachieved, you know, and he's done it at the expense of Bayern Munich, who spent an awful lot of money in that period as well. People forget that, you know, Harry Kane, Kim Min-jae from Napoli, who's just sort of become one of the, you know, the dominant centre-halves in world football. Now, obviously, he's not coming. I think they need to look at other people who've done similar things, really. And fundamentally, that also involves balancing European football with domestic pursuits as well. I think any Liverpool manager needs to be able to balance both. And we've seen with managers that haven't had European experience, like Brendan Rodgers, has just never been able to wrestle that back. You know, in his career, I would say he's never been able, because he made that jump from Liverpool, from Swansea to Liverpool so quickly, he was never able to sort of learn about Europe while he was a Swansea manager, for example. So I think any manager coming in will need to understand that it's not just about one competition. You've got to be able to balance numerous competitions. And there are a few potential candidates who might fall into that category, who I'm sure we'll talk about over the course of this podcast.
Yeah, well, let's throw that one to James, because you're the man who knows. You tell us, James, who's the next manager? We're blaming you for everything, as usual.
Well, I think there's been quite understandably a lot of attention currently on Ruben Amorim at Sporting. It's interesting because in the process of speaking to people involved at the club off the back of the Alonso news, they were keen to stress, look, of course Alonso would have been an incredibly strong candidate, but just to be clear, he was never offered the job. There was never anything on the table, because there were never even any face-to-face talks, because he had made it clear he was focused on life at Leverkusen, and then made a final decision during the international break that he intended to stay put. So the contact was only ever done kind of with his camp. And then those conversations I had with people last week led on to them saying that, you know, that there isn't a preferred candidate as things stand, because, you know, Richard Hughes was only appointed a couple of weeks ago. He is leading this search, and that shortlist is in the process of being drawn up. So, you know, you take that at face value. But I think it stands to reason that Amorim, just when you look at who else is out there, he has to be right up there. When you look at, you know, I think he ticks a lot of boxes in terms of he's transformed the fortunes of Sporting. He ended their long wait for the Portuguese title. They're back up there this season in a title race with Benfica. The attacking brand of football that he plays, I think, makes him a good fit as well, the way in which he's developed young players there. So there's a lot to admire there. But as Simon said before, and I think it is interesting, where it feels we're at with the cycle of managers now, it does feel like whoever Liverpool go for will be something of a gamble, as opposed to, you know, I think Klopp was as close to a sure thing as you could possibly get when you make a managerial appointment. You know, there were no dissenting voices, were there? Everyone wanted him from the start because He'd won big stuff. He had the European experience that Simon talked about. You know, he was kind of like at the peak of his powers. Yet, I think, yeah, Liverpool are now looking at the next generation of managers where you're almost like basing it on what you think someone will go on to achieve rather than simply what they have achieved already.
Have your say and get involved by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com.
So, yeah, I don't want to be too negative because we're in a title race and most of me wants to just focus on that and worry about the manager in the, you know, sort of later on. But I can afford to do that because I'm not running a football club. Fenway Sports Group here in November that Jurgen Klopp wants to leave. Oh, okay. And they haven't got a shortlist in April.
It is very strange, I think, Tony. I've got to be honest, I'm not very inspired by the idea of Amorim. I think, yes, he's done well with Sporting Lisbon, but it cannot be forgotten that they're one of the three big Portuguese clubs. And he haven't really made much of an imprint in the Champions League or in Europe while he's been there. You know, you would argue that Sergio Conceição has done more with Porto than he has in Europe. If you're looking at Portuguese managers, I understand, you know, people talking about stylistically. But, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Amorim plays three at the back, like a 3-4-3, which, again, will be a little bit of a departure.
Sizable. Sends a shiver of fear through me, you know.
Yeah. Well, particularly, as you say, Tony, like at Anfield, you'd have to ensure that one of those three would be contributing in an attacking sense because otherwise you're just having a redundant player at the back. But anyway, I have some question marks over that. I mean, one of the other names that I think comes into it for me, just in terms of his experience, what he's achieved, would be Simone Inzaghi. I can understand maybe a few questions around whether sort of Italians and Liverpool, for some reason, do not tend to go well, whether it's maybe there's absolutely no foundation for that. But I think he's done very well as Lazio manager. He's overachieved at Inter with less resources. He's probably going to win the league this year. Obviously got them to the Champions League. Question marks over his English. But in terms of purely from a sporting perspective, bringing a bit of balance to a club at Inter when he went in, there was a lot of uncertainty. He's actually played some really good football. I thought they were really unlucky against Liverpool over two legs two seasons ago to go out. So his name should be in the conversation, I would say. That's just my view, not based on any sort of intelligence about what's going on. But it is a concern, Tony. I agree. I think they've had quite a long run up at this. And I think part of the reason why they find themselves in this position has become, you know, the Jurgen Klopp show at Liverpool. They didn't have a sporting director in place as soon as it became clear that Jurgen Klopp was leaving to lead the search. So it's led to quite a lot of wasted time, really. In reality, whether Liverpool would have been able to get somebody in position to replace Jurgen Klopp as early as now, I'm not sure whether that reality exists anyway. But it does feel like they're sort of up against it, you know, in terms of time over the next couple of months, because a lot of other clubs are looking for new managers, potentially Barcelona, potentially Manchester United, you know, who knows, Chelsea again, Bayern Munich, all these clubs, maybe Real Madrid as well. So it's going to be a really competitive market, and Liverpool, I would think, are going to have to use what little advantage they have at this moment with knowing that the manager is going and get to a position where they feel comfortable as quickly as possible.
You know, we say it all the time on this pod, but I'm getting increasingly twitchy about the three players who are out of contract in the summer, well, who are a year from out of contract this summer. And obviously, you know, it would be arguably the three most important players, wouldn't it? You know, Van Dijk, Trent and Salah. Oh, well, that's brilliant. This is working out great.
Yeah, I mean, it is awkward because I think you also have to look at it from the other side in terms of these other names that are now in the mix. They're all in jobs. It's all well and good to say, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd have someone, it's already set up for him to come over, take over from Klopp, even reaching out to players, staff or whatever, making people aware of where they stand in the plans, everything else. But I just don't think that's realistic because, you know, if you're Amorim, he's in the middle of the thick of a Portuguese title race. He ain't going to want to have any distractions from that. Certainly nothing publicly. De Zerbi at Brighton, still got a job to do there. Whether, you know, Simon mentions Inzaghi, I think he's definitely gone way under the radar in terms of his body of work as a manager. Although I do think his lack of English is a major, major stumbling block for him in terms of his claims to that job. So I think, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd want someone already having those conversations about next season. But I just don't think that's where we're at. I think it is one that was always, unless you had a situation where Alonso was like, yes, 100%, I want it. And then I think they would have tried to have kept that quiet for as long as it was humanly possible. I think where we're at now, I think it's bound to go on into May. Because, you know, if you're Amorim, why would you're not going to want to run the risk, are you, of being accused of creating an unnecessary distraction?
Yeah, and there was reports of Barcelona being interested in him. Say, can you clear up one thing for me? What's a data-led search for a manager? How do you do it with data? He's won so many games. He's won these trophies. What's this?
Yeah, come on, Simon.
Yeah,
clear it up.
Yeah, come on, tell me.
Am I in charge of this search, Tony? I feel like it's my responsibility here.
I've got to blame someone, yeah. And I'm always blaming James.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I've done too much blaming of James on this pod already today.
There's not enough blaming of James. a data-led search. I mean, I'm intrigued by that description as well. Data everything, isn't it, really? I mean, it seems to be, a lot of it seems to be tactical, you know, in terms of what a manager has done, which might potentially relate to some of the players that Liverpool have got. You know, they'll be assessing all sorts of passing ranges, running distances, the expectations that potential candidates have on their players when balanced against what is currently in place now. I think there's a determination at Liverpool to keep things as normal and as much consistency as possible between the current manager and his successor. But I think there has to be an acceptance that there's going to be some sort of evolution between Klopp and whoever succeeds him. Obviously, there's been a bit of talk about William Spearman, the data man sort of behind the club, being a part of this. But ultimately, it will come down to, you know, a hard decision between Richard Hughes and Michael Edwards. There's a belief that Richard Hughes will favour somebody from the Italian market. I'm not quite sure whether it's as simple as that, really. I've even heard talk the last couple of days of, well, it's got to be, you know, Gary O'Neill's got to be in the frame. You know, let's not forget, Richard Hughes plays a role in getting rid of Gary O'Neill from Bournemouth last summer because it was felt that he wasn't quite far along enough in his development as a manager. And Andoni Iriola was. Now, I think if Iriola had a few more years' experience in the Premier League, if he'd got Bournemouth a bit higher up the league, he might have been amongst the considerations here. Unfortunately for him, I guess it'll be a bit too soon. But it's a really difficult one to sort of to guess, really, because I agree with James. I don't think there is one outstanding candidate who just jumps out now and says, well, it's got to be him. There were certain flaws with Xabi Alonso, you know, the lack of, I suppose, sample size of his work. But there's flaws with everybody. But I think he ticked the most boxes, I would say, Alonso. I'm not too sure which other manager gets close in terms of those number of boxes, really.
One of the interesting things, James, and I wonder if can spreadsheet Willy factor this in, is, you know, you talked about, you know, at the match pods about the emotional aspect of it. And, you know, we've long talked about, I've never seen a team and the crowd feed off each other in the way and build the energy. And obviously that all comes somehow from Klopp, and I can't explain it all, you know, but like it's something that you know, you've talked about, we've talked about. How important is that ability to energise the crowd and the team? You know, is that something that will just remain as a sort of residual impact of Klopp and, you know, and continue? Or is that down to a manager?
No, I think it's down to a manager. I think it's there as a resource, but you still have to tap into it. I don't think it's as simple as whoever takes over just gets that emotional connection, and away you go. You know, Anfield is a fortress. Let's just carry on like Klopp was still there. I think you have to work for that. And that is why, that's another reason for me why Alonso would have been perfect, because I think because he gets Liverpool, he gets the city, you know, the fans adore him. That would have been there from the off. But I think whoever comes in will have to work for that. I mean, if you, even when you go back to when Klopp first came in, if you remember rightly, he was actually very underwhelmed by the atmosphere at Anfield in his early months. I think he was expecting a lot more, and I think he probably didn't realise just how kind of down in the dumps everyone was after, you know, missing out on the title in 13-14.
Brendan will do that to you.
And so I think, and you know, obviously there was that famous example, wasn't there, of, you know, fans leaving early against Crystal Palace and him saying, you know, we decide when it's over, you know, we're in this together. So you, even Klopp had to create that. So yeah, that is an important element. And I think sometimes the data-led stuff, I think sometimes maybe even we're guilty of over-egging it a bit, because it is very much, it's very much part of the picture rather than the whole picture. And, you know, even going back to Klopp's appointment, although he had this, you know, when you looked at his CV alone, you know, that should have told you that, yes, he's the right man. But also the data backed up the fact that his pretty miserable last season at Dortmund, which, you know, obviously they pulled things around a bit in the second half of the season, but all the underlying data showed that they were actually a lot better than results suggested. So it's just part of the picture, I think. And, you know, all those character references that Liverpool have built on a number of different candidates, they're just as equally important as what the numbers say.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose that's why, you know, one of the names that we haven't heard mentioned who will be available in the summer is Thomas Tuchel, who's, you know, two Champions League finals behind him. You'd think someone like him would be in the mix, Si, but he clearly doesn't seem to be.
I think quite a lot of managers like Tuchel or Tuchel who...
Oh, you probably pronounced it right. Sorry, I just pronounced it wrong. Sorry. There is an injunction on me which forbids me from pronouncing foreigners' names right.
You know what, Tony? I genuinely don't know the answer. Is it Tuchel or Tuchel? Is it?
It's James? Probably Tuchel. Tuchel. It's probably Tuchel, Tuchel. But you know,
we
it's
should really know
Thomas.
It's Thomas, yeah. Tommy.
Let's just be familiar.
Tommy T.
Tommy T. Right. So
my man, Tommy T.
Yeah. I think he's developed a reputation for himself, hasn't he? As somebody who complains about the owners. I think that's possibly a little bit unfair, given that the base of that seems to be how he interacted with Todd Bowley in the last months of his time at Chelsea. You know, and since then, I think Todd Bowley's sort of proven himself as quite a useless owner, really, hasn't he, in terms of what they've done in the transfer market. So I would say it probably reflect with time that sort of conflict reflects better on Tuchel. But you know,
Tommy T.
I like him. You know, I do like Tuchel. I think his teams are close enough to Klopp, you know, in terms of their aggression, they're well organized. I understand he's had, you know, a bad year at Bayern, but they did win the league last year. I wouldn't say the odds were against them, but he inherited that job and in difficult circumstances and got them to the league title. Now, people might say, well, you know, he should be winning the league title with Bayern. But, you know, I would say it was an achievement to win the league last year. I would not be against the idea of it. I know people who've worked with him and say that he's great to work for. The players do tend to actually like him more so than maybe his perception. He's also got a really good assistant who's from Liverpool called Anthony Barry, who I'm absolutely certain will be bang up for that job because his family are all big Liverpoolians. I'm surprised he hasn't been in the conversation, but it seems to be a similar situation to, you know, we reported about Roberto Zerbi the other day, who has sort of in football developed a bit of a reputation for himself as a bit of a moaner. You know, he's complaining about Tony Bloom recently. And I think it's a sort of thing when you cite the owners, it puts other owners off, doesn't it? It makes you think, oh well, they're gonna expose my shortcomings, and they're a bit scared of going for somebody like that. I suppose the key question around Tuchel: could you imagine Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes going for somebody like Thomas Tuchel.
I can't see it.
I just can't see it. Which, I don't know. I suppose the other question around Tuchel is he doesn't really hang around that long, does he? Do Liverpool want to... That's the one question that hasn't really been asked. Are Liverpool looking to make an appointment that lasts the club, you know, as long as Klopp, or maybe 5 years, or is it a relatively short-term appointment to see them through a period of... which could be quite difficult transition, albeit with a talented team that if you get a tune out of, if you get the right manager in, it's not beyond possibility that Liverpool, you know, over the next couple of years have a good couple of seasons. But that hasn't really been sort of discussed, has it? Is it going to be a long-term appointment, this? Are they going to give the manager the time to oversee certain changes that need to be followed, and, you know, maybe allow, you know, an off-season or two where things aren't quite as good so he can really stamp his his authority onto it? That remains to be seen, really. At the end of the day, Tuchel is managing the Premier League as well. As you say, he's won Champions League, he's managed big clubs, he's used to replacing Jürgen Klopp. But the bottom line is, I just can't see Edwards or Hughes going for him. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, I'd be very underwhelmed if he got the job.
Underwhelmed.
Yeah. I just think even, you know, he went to, you know, he won titles at PSG, didn't he? But Simon would win the title with PSG.
Come on, James.
Are you saying I wouldn't?
No, I had you down as a double act. And I think even like his last couple of years at Bayern, they don't fill you with much hope or optimism. They were so lucky to win the league last season. It was only Dortmund making an absolute hash of it that let them in right down to that final day. And then this time around, you know, obviously the flip side of Alonso doing such an incredible job at Leverkusen is Bayern, with their resources, to be 13 points behind Leverkusen is embarrassing. So, Tuchel would not be one for me. I'd much rather Liverpool put their faith and you know, more of a gamble in terms of someone who doesn't have maybe quite the trophy haul. I'd rather see someone like Amorim that you could really get behind in terms of, because I think, just touching on what Simon said, I think the target is that this will be another long-term project. I don't think it's going to... No one's suggested to me as some kind of like, you know, we just need someone for the next couple of years. This is like, they want it to be the start of another era.
Yeah, I mean, because there's no one really out there you can say, oh, let's wait a year or two and get a stopgap in. I have to say, the more we talk about this, the more I am filled with dread about what's coming. So let's just bury our heads in the sand and talk about this season, which is far more fun.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
All right, Si, well, you... back permitting, you'll be going to the Sheffield United game. Well, let's just touch on that. This should be a nailed-on 3 points. Nothing's ever certain in the Premier League, but, you know, if ever it's a gimme, this is a gimme.
Yes. They're a really poor team who, I would say, you know, they obviously merited promotion into the Premier League last season after a good year in the Championship, but really, it's a Championship team in the Premier League. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but, you know, the results have proven that this season they've been hammered too many times, you know, to dismount that reality, I think.
What is it? They get beat 19-0 every week at home or something, don't they?
Yeah, it feels that way. You know, they get hammered at home as well, which Bramall Lane usually is quite a difficult place to go to, I would say. But Liverpool's result there was one of the closer ones, but they've been absolutely battered on too many occasions. So I expect Liverpool to be a bit more up to speed than they were on Sunday. You know, they've obviously had a few more days training and be back into the rhythm of things a bit more than they were ahead of the weekend's game. So yeah, I just expect Liverpool to win quite comfortably. Really, I can't see anything else happening.
It'd be interesting to see how Klopp does approach it, whether he does hold a few back for Sunday. That must be a temptation, as much as you can't, you know, take it as an absolute gimme, but it's about as close as you get in the Premier League. You know, they have shown a little bit more fight, haven't they, of late? When you know, when you think they had that run of games, didn't they, where they, was it shipped 5 against Villa, 5 against Brighton, 6 against Arsenal, all at home. And I think we did an article on The Athletic about they were on course to break the record for, you know, the worst Premier League season. Yet, you know, there has been a bit of fight with those draws recently against Bournemouth and Fulham. But yeah, Liverpool should have far too much for them. And it's just one of those ones we just want them to get through it, hopefully conserve a bit of energy. You know, Klopp's hopefully able to use the full 5 subs, juggle his resources a little bit, no injuries, and then full focus on Old Trafford on Sunday. That's by far and away the big one this week.
Yeah, and say that after what was really a poor show in the FA Cup, they weren't in the game for the first half, then they got back in and should have just killed us. It looked like a testimonial at times, and then they let them in. I have not got over it, and I'll probably never get over it. I admit it in my life. I can go to therapy and all that, but I still won't get over it. I don't care why you leave one man back on your own corner in the very last minute of extra time. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, Liverpool on that day were to some extent masters of their own downfall. I mean, at 2-1, I thought this is going to be another 5 or 6, this at Old Trafford, the way they play. But they were just a bit too casual, and you know, with the final approach. I don't know whether the one game too many, or, you know, I don't think it was an attitude thing. They were just a little bit slack where it mattered. Now, not very often do you have 2 games at Old Trafford and, you know, in relatively quick succession. So I think it's a great opportunity for Liverpool to put that right. You know, speaking to a lot of people who went to that game at Old Trafford, it really hurt them. You know, really horrible way to lose a game to your rivals who you really should be beating, who you know you're better than, and they beat you in the 120th minute and make you look a bit stupid as well. So Liverpool have got to be bang up for it. I don't think United are very good as well. I mean, Klopp's had a few disappointing results, I would say, against United. During his time, he's obviously had some great results as well, but that was probably the worst one, really, because of the manner of it and because of the difference in quality between the two teams. So this is a game, really, which where Liverpool have really got to go and try and hurt them, because a lot of people were hurt by the manner of that defeat. Obviously, it stopped the conversation around, you know, any potential quadruple. I don't think that's the end of the world, but it's just the mere fact that they lost in those circumstances to, you know, your greatest rivals just hurts. So they're going to have to use that desire and turn it on them. Alternatively, though, you know, it comes quite quickly. It's not as easy as to say, well, you know, we've got to put this right. It's there might be a little bit of scarring left there. Who knows? It's going to be an interesting test, I would say, of Klopp's management to see how he tries to take it on. I just think if Liverpool get on top of United and are ruthless, they'll win. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, James, I mean, I suppose it's good that the pain still lingers from the cup game. It will be, I mean, I should imagine that Jürgen will be reminding the team of it.
Yeah. It's funny, because even going back a few weeks, and as bad as United have been for big chunks of this season, I remember thinking it's a massive ask to go to Old Trafford and win twice in quick succession. You know, Liverpool haven't done that too often. So, and if you couldn't win both of them, then obviously this one on this Sunday was always going to be the priority. I think, if anything, what happened a few weeks ago makes me more confident ahead of Sunday, because I just think as a manager, it's perfect in terms of your preparation. For a start, that feeling of hurt and disappointment is so fresh. I think that is a massive motivation. And also, you know, in terms of the analysis, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think, you know, you think back to that game and Liverpool started slowly. It's been a problem all season. That was a problem, because then you allow United to feed off the noise from the stands. You don't quieten it down. And then Liverpool did really well to get back into the game. But second half, their decision-making was absolutely appalling. When you think of, there was that image, wasn't there, I think we all would have seen, of like the 5-on-2 or 5-on-3 breakaway. And Liverpool ended up not even getting a shot away. that was symptomatic of letting that game drift in the second half, not being ruthless enough. There's some pretty glaring mistakes there that I think you sort them out, and then Liverpool are far too strong. I mean, I sat and watched United play Brentford last weekend. I couldn't believe how bad they were. For 95 minutes, it was the most one-sided 0-0 I'd ever seen, with Brentford just failing to make their dominance count. And then United, even after Mason Mount, you think, has pulled off a smashing grab, they still then shoot themselves in the foot. So you just want Liverpool to go there and actually showcase the gulf in quality between the teams, because we know it exists. The league table says it exists, but you just want to see it on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, the results at the Etihad last week between City and Arsenal leaves us, it's not much of a margin for error, but, you know, it's a two-point cushion. Well, it's actually not a margin for error, really, as I'd say. But, I mean, are we favourites with 9 games to go?
Well, yes, I would say they are, Liverpool. I mean, I think the outcome of tonight's game between Villa and City, you know, Villa are one place below City. I know the game's at City, but Villa have had an excellent season. They've taken points off some of the top teams already.
I think more to the point, whatever happens, you know, there, I don't think any of these teams in the top three are going to win out. They're not going to take all the points available.
Yeah, I agree. I think each team has it in them to drop points. I mean, I just always sort of side with City and Liverpool, mainly because they've gone the distance. They've got two managers who've done that, you know, gone the distance into the last day of the season, winning game after game after game after game. But you can, you know, watching Guardiola at the moment, you can always tell when he's concerned, because he shows it. You know, he's very agitated in his press conferences at the moment.
That display to Grealish at the end, who come on and substitute, you're like,
City, I mean, City haven't been as good this season, as convincing, I would say, as they have been in most of the other seasons. But there's just that fact that they've still got so many good players and they've got a world-class manager that if they don't stay the distance, I'd be surprised. By the end of the season, if the gap between the team that finishes first and second is more than 2 points, I'd be surprised. But each team has got some tricky games left, which could cause them problems, getting the sort of opponents that have caused each of these teams problems in the course of this season. So that makes me think it's about which team overcomes a disappointment that happens the quickest will end up winning it. I think it's very difficult to separate each of the three sides. I think that they're all very, very good, but each one has, you know, I still think, do Liverpool have enough players available to them to be able to combat the Europa League and the Premier League? Do Arsenal have the required standard of goalkeeper and centre forward to win the league? You know, does City actually have, their squad was their bench was really, really strong the other day, but I still think that they're not as strong as they were in seasons gone by. Do they still have that real desire to sort of to go and win when it matters? They didn't against Arsenal, did they, the other day? So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, well, James, I think let's ask you the first part of what say questions is, are Liverpool going to have the players available? Where are we with them all?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that does give me greater hope that Liverpool can win this race. The fact that when you think, you know, Trent is targeting either Atlanta at home next week or probably more likely Palace at home in the Premier League the following Sunday for his comeback. And I think it hasn't got the wider recognition it deserves that Liverpool have done what they've done this season and maintained a challenge without so many key personnel. Trent and his role and his change of position was so integral a year ago to transforming the fortunes and kind of creating the platform that then Liverpool built on from August onwards. You know, he hasn't kicked a ball for, 2 months now, due to that knee injury. You know, Diogo Jota, probably the most natural finisher in the squad, he's working to a similar timescale. He's not far away. You know, you've got Alisson to come back shortly after that. We barely even talk about Alisson's absence, do we? Because Kelleher has just been magnificent. And I thought, you know, Alexis McAllister rightly dominated the coverage after the win over Brighton last weekend, because I thought McAllister was sensational. But, you know, there was that big save from Kelleher to keep out Dunk's header. And, you know, that showed his concentration levels on a day when he didn't have that much to do. And Curtis Jones is on the brink of a comeback as well, to give Klopp another option in that midfield department. I think that should fuel the belief, the fact that the cavalry is on the way, if you like. And I think also the other thing to remember in terms of the coming weeks is City and Arsenal have got Real Madrid and Bayern Munich in the Champions League. You know, in theory, and it doesn't always work out like this, but that those games should take a lot more out of them than facing Atalanta, who are, what, sixth or seventh in Serie A, should take out of Liverpool in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. So, yeah, I'm optimistic.
Well, that's a good note to end on. And that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. 9 games to go. When we speak to you next, it'll be 7 games to go. It's going too fast. I'm scared. I'm terrified. Anyway, thanks to James and Simon for joining me, and you all for listening. James will be at the match on Sunday at Old Trafford, so you want to tune into that, because I am sure there'll be big things happening. James will have plenty to say. And as I say, we'll be back next week.
The Athletic.